Hello and welcome to the Hoop Collective Podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we're doing early on Tuesday afternoon. Joining me from Austin, Texas, driven out of his office today by construction, is Kurt Goldsberry.
What is up, Brian? These playoffs are in full swing. I can't wait to talk about them. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for coming. And joining us from Oakland, California, fresh back from Sacramento, where the Kings are up 2-0. How much of a victory lap is Anscape's Mark Spears about to take?
I just said they're going to make the playoffs. I didn't expect this. 2-0 on the Warriors. Incredible atmosphere in Sacramento. Both those games are like soap operas. It's you know, the E-40 game, now the Draymond game. The Warriors just need to go home, man. They just need to be back in their comfortable confines of Chase Center.
Yeah, well, so it's just the environment in general in there. The Kings have been the more poised team, Spears. And it's not over at all, but I did not expect that. And I don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves, but the Kings are making the Warriors uncomfortable on offense. The Kings defense is knocking the Warriors out of getting into the spots that they want to get into. Mm-hmm. And it is remarkable. What are some of the things that you've been watching these first couple games?
Well, one thing we have to say is Michael Brown is doing an amazing job. He knows the cheat code. He knows the recipe to the original herbs and spices of the Warriors, you know, and he's using it to his advantage. You know, even on, you mentioned the defensive end, on the offensive end, he's basically telling Fox and Monk to make this a track meet. Look at these guys as like old men and make them run and run and run. And it, I think it ends up giving the Warriors fatigue on the other end. And so, like, Mike is, like, been the greatest Mr. Miyagi for this Kings team so far in terms of just making them feel equal, making them feel like they're better, making them feel like this isn't a fluke, that they're supposed to be a special team, that this is what they're supposed to do. And there's been nothing that I've seen in these first two games that suggests that they haven't been here before. They have been poised. They have been put the ball down your throat. They've been physical. They've been tough defensively. They fed by their crowd. And the one thing that isn't really talked about the Kings, well, another thing Harrison Barnes reminded me is like, yeah, if you guys had put us on national TV, you'd know how good we were. Right? Told me that yesterday. But the Kings are the best team in the Western Conference on the road. So now they're bringing that best, you know, they to me, they play better when they're on the road than when they're at home.
Spears, all the numbers reflect it. You know, they are coming into the postseason. They were 29th in defense on their home court and 8th in defense on the road. They defend better on the road than they do at home. Now, I mean, I don't know if that'll carry because let me tell you something. They were not 29th in defense performance-wise in these last two games. No. Kirk, I think the Warriors missed – close to 63 pointers combined in these first two games. And the Warriors, I believe, just set the record for most threes ever made in a season. It's still a huge part of their offense. And they've missed some open looks, but a lot of their looks are heavily contested. I mean, Klay and Steph are having difficulty getting clean looks, at least the number of clean looks that we're used to seeing.
You're exactly right. And a couple of things that Spears said really stick out to me. And the Warriors have looked old. And part of that is credit to the just incredible athleticism and youth of the Sacramento Kings and the game plan. But they've looked old. There was a moment in game two where the sideline reporter asked Steve Kerr if he was worried about the turnovers at the end of the first quarter. I think the Warriors had 8 turnovers in the first quarter, Brian. And he kind of dismissed it because the defense was playing well. Turns out he shouldn't have been so dismissive because they had 20 turnovers last night. The Kings got out into transition, had 29 points. De'Aaron Fox, if there's another player in the league right now that's more scary with a live ball turnover. I don't know who that is. They beat up the Warriors on the glass. They won the game in so many different facets. It wasn't a fluke. And I think what we saw with Draymond, I'm sure we'll talk about that a lot, but it was a frustration moment as much as anything. And one of the things that jumps out to me, and credit to Spears who saw this, the Golden State Warriors are the only team in California right now without a series lead. All the other California teams are doing better than them right now. And it's just remarkable to see that Sacramento just taking it to the defending champs like this. And the last thing I'll say to defend the Golden State, you talk about these drastic home road splits. Well, the only other team that maybe has more drastic splits is the Golden State Warriors. So going back to Chase, I think they got a chance to even the series up. But what we saw was the Kings doing exactly what they won in those first two games.
Yeah. So one of the things when you watch De'Aaron Fox play is most good offensive players have spots on the floor where they want to get to. You can go down the list of great scorers in history and you know where they are. You know, Jordan liked the mid post. Once he got in the mid post, Kobe liked to operate on the wings. LeBron liked to operate on the wings. You know, Dirk had the nail, for example. We could go on and on. Paul Pierce, remember, he used to get to the elbow. So Fox has spots where he is very comfortable in getting to. They seem to be, he likes to be able to get, foul line extended area on the corners. The trick, though, is getting to those spots, right? Like anybody can establish a spot. And that's one of the things where you see the greats, like, Kawhi. I was talking on the last pod about watching Kawhi in game one, and, game two will be tonight. By the time this pod comes out, that game will have been played, but Kawhi knows exactly where he wants to go. And when he gets there, he's extremely comfortable. So De'Aaron Fox has that. He has developed that in his game. Early in his career, he had the floater, was really good for him that he has. And he's developed a great mid-range shot, and he also has the floater. What's so impressive about him is that he's able to get to those spots. And to be able to get to those spots on the inside the three-point line, when you are under 6'5", that's really hard. And he does it, quite obviously, with speed. Yeah. He's always had speed. But the way he is able to use his speed to get hit to his spots is elite. And then, of course, he basically... Davion Mitchell hit the dagger three, the rainbow three last night. But, Fox hit the big three from the top of the key. And what was the percentage chance that was going in? 96%. The ball came out to him. It couldn't have been in more rhythm of a shot in his life than that ball was in rhythm. And the confidence at which he goes to is just so impressive for a guy who's doing this for the first time. But I really think it's based, Kirk, in his ability to use his speed to get to those spots. And we have fast players in the NBA. It's not the first time we've seen it, but it is unusual for me to see a guy be able to execute like this under pressure. And if I'm the Warriors, I'm really trying to figure out, my game plan is going to be, how in the hell, what can we do on our alignment? Because they were throwing two and three guys at him, and they were throwing two. And by the way, Malik Monk's not far off.
Yeah.
Because Malik Monk operates as the curveball. He's pretty quick too. It's sort of like a fastball, a split fingered fastball. I don't want to make he's not a changeup, but Fox gets downhill and they're able to go to Monk and he gets downhill too. Like they're using that speed. It's not just speed in getting a turnover and running the other end and just outrunning them. It's speed within half court sets that's beating the Warriors just to basic rotations.
It reminds me, let me give you one comp, is Tony Parker. People forget how fast Tony was, and he could get to his teardrop and just he could score 20 points in the paint.
Yeah, he would lead the league in scoring in the paint year after year as a 6 foot, whatever it was, 6 foot one.
Yeah. And he was so fast and he was so skilled with his finishing. And that's the kind of stuff. Great in the playoffs, by the way. And I think, and I want to hear what Spears says, because he was in the building. Spears, did the Warriors look as slow in person as they do on TV, or is it more the Kings are fast? How do you see this?
Welcome to the De'Aaron Fox Show. I've been watching this. This kid is like a Ferrari, like the most amazing European car, you sports car you will see. He could go to 0 to 100 in milliseconds, right? But then his body control is so amazing. He could stop on a dime. He can slow it down and get around potential charges and make this beautiful acrobatic layup. He's like a gymnast, not a gymnast, a ballet magician on the court.
Being great with speed is you have to have skill in stopping.
Yes. And his body control is the best in the league. I don't know anybody better. And the thing that's interesting with him, just kind of going back before the season, his wife played at Cal. Pretty good basketball player. She tried out for the Storm. And she actually broke her wrist going into De'Aaron's condo garage. Like this, she was trying to hit this code and the car went back and she caught her wrist and broke her wrist and wanted to be in the WNBA so bad that she still tried out with a broken wrist and lied to him about what her deal was. Didn't make the team. Anyway, she was, she was a McDonald's All-American, all that. She could play. So his wife is also a basketball savant. She used to intern for the Warriors. And when she interned for the Warriors, the guy that she interned for was Luke Laux, now the player development coach for the Kings that Mike Brown hired. And when Mike Brown hired him, she called Luke and said, I need you to work with my husband. I need you to take him to the next level. And Mike Brown sent Luke to San Diego to work out with De'Aaron every day, get him in better shape, work on things to make his shot better, everything. He's a great player development coach. He even went with them on their honeymoon. And so now I think we've seen this. Luke has basically been on Fox's hip, helping taking his game to the next level. And it was interesting that this was the connection with his former intern, his wife, that pushed this relationship with Fox that ultimately got him to get in better shape, to fine tune his game and take his game to the best level of his career at the best time of his career so far.
You know, before we talk about the Draymond thing, I just want to say something about Mike Brown. Right now, we got some teams that are looking for coaches. The Rockets have been doing interviews. The Pistons have been doing interviews. We may see another one or two pop up. Now, Mike Brown had been fired as a head coach 3 times. Several times, even when he was on the Warriors bench, you know, coaching seasons would come and go and I don't think he would even get interviews. People wouldn't even thought because they thought, well, you know, he's not a head coach anymore. He's not really a head coach, even though his record was pretty good, but you know, he had the benefit of having LeBron and Kobe help that record. And this is and by the way, Mike would be the first to tell you he's a much better, more seasoned and smart coach in his mid 50s than he was when he was in his late 30s or mid to late 30s when he got his first head coaching job when he was in Cleveland, 2005. But this is an example of how coaches can be like players and get much more dynamic and better because I think the head coach award is going to be announced on Wednesday, yeah, where Mike will almost certainly be. And I'm not sure what day they're.
Wednesday.
I know there is. What day is Mr. Clutch, the Jerry West Award that, you know. Anyway, the Kings are picking up some hardware. Mm-hmm. De'Aaron Fox is going to win best clutch player and Mike's going to win best coach.
I didn't even know Mr. Clutch was a thing. Is that new?
I hope you vote.
Apparently, that's right.
You don't vote.
Yeah.
You don't vote.
Yeah. You wrote about it?
Oh, a long time ago.
Man,
yeah.
I'm
just giving you.
My bad.
I'm just messing with you. Yeah, they introduced it this year. This is the first year and bone to pick. if there was one word that shouldn't just be a regular season award, it's this one. But De'Aaron might get it.
He's been phenomenal in the fourth quarter. So yeah.
One other thing on his rise, Brian, is that everybody talks about the Halliburton trade. All the nerds like me love Halliburton. But I think the addition by subtraction in that backcourt really opened up a lot of possession opportunities and sort of cleared up a bottleneck there. And Sabonis has obviously been good for them. And nobody's sad to have Tyrese Halliburton on their team. Indiana's not crying either.
Yeah. Right. Brian, this is the thing.
I want to go back to Mike real quick. And you know this. You were around him a lot when he was in Cleveland. The Mike Brown that we see with the Kings, I think, is what he learned from Steve is how to relax and let his hair down. Some of the quotes, like Mike now, Brian, I can't wait to see for you to see him in a press conference. He's joking. He's having fun.
He was talking about his grandson.
Yeah,
which just says a lot. When I met him, his oldest son was 11.
Yeah,
or something like that.
Yeah.
But
he's let his hair down, and he learned that from Steve. And also, I think, and I actually talked to Rich Paul about this a little last night. Like, he had LeBron, he had Kobe. Now he basically finally is able to have his own Clay. And having coached the Nigerian team also helped him learn how to build his own foundation, how to build something from scratch. So he also had a willing audience. To me, it was just a perfect thing because I think for years he did get a couple interviews when he was with Golden State. But he also had I remember Brian Shaw used to say there's a lot of jobs that when he was assistant to Phil Jackson, there's a lot of head coaching jobs aren't as good as being an assistant coach with the Lakers,
Right.
And that's how Mike was in San Francisco. He got a nice condo two blocks away from the arena.
He was getting paid really well.
He didn't have the pressure.
He signed a 5-year deal with the Cavs and got fired after one, and he got all that money. So he was he was not only getting paid well by the Warriors, he was still getting paid by the Cavs for many years.
You go to lunch with him and he say, this is on the Gilberts.
Yeah. I used to joke. I remember during the finals in Cleveland, in Cleveland, they have courtside boxes. No other arena has this where they have almost little mini suites right next to on the floor. And I remember one shoot around, I was out there joking with Steve and Mike. And I said, "Hey Steve, you see this box right here, this premiums, they just have to use that to pay Mike's salary this year."
And he didn't deny it.
No, he had fun with it. When you're fired twice, you can have that. But Mike's played a huge role. And I got to tell you, if I showed Mike video, the Mike Brown that I knew in 2000, forget about 2005, even 2007-08, I will say this, and I know we don't want to go too far down memory lane. People want to talk about the playoffs, but in 2007, the Cavs beat the Pistons in the Eastern Conference Finals. It was the first big upset of LeBron's career. They got to the finals, and famously, the Cavs won that game where LeBron scored 29 out of 30 points down the stretch in just double overtime. And it's kind of looked at LeBron just carried those bunch of jokers. But if you ever watch that game, I don't know why you would. It is regularly on NBA TV. But if you ever watch the game, and if you're a Kings fan, maybe you want to watch it. Mike Brown did brilliant coaching that night. I know that it may not seem like it because you're like, well, how could it be brilliant coaching if a guy did 29 out of 30? Well, I would say watch, and you will see how he coached them into that victory. But if I showed Mike Brown video of this team that runs up and down and plays with this speed and kind of is loosey goosey defensively and can be gotten to at the rim, he would probably pass out and say, that is not my team. There is no way I would never have a team like that. So that's a thing. All right. Let's talk about Draymond real quick. I don't know if we're going to get a verdict today because there's 2 days off. I don't know if we're going to get a verdict today. Kirk, my opinion on the play is that an ejection was probably warranted because it was excessive. What's the unnecessary and excessive. I think it met the criteria for flagrant two foul. I do not think it merits a suspension, specifically because Sabonis initiated the thing by grabbing him, for which he was penalized a technical foul. And therefore, I do not think that there will be a suspension. Draymond's history, the NBA, whether they want to say it or not, does, you know, have history. They do let it affect them. I do not think it will be an issue here. I think we will have everybody on the court for game three. I'll take your opinion. That's mine.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and on the Ways to Win podcast, coaches Craig Robinson and John Calipari are here to help. Each week, Craig and Coach Cal use their on-court wisdom to solve your off-court problems. Whether it's trouble at home or a workplace dilemma, the coaches will help you find a winning formula for success. And you'll hear from prominent athletes, business leaders, and celebrities who reveal insights that made them into the leaders they are today. Like President Obama, who breaks down his bracket and talks about how he deals with pressure by projecting confidence, believing in your team, and taking criticism. Listen to Ways to Win wherever you get your podcasts. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, but nothing on your roof. So who's ever up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit directtv.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
Yeah, I probably agree, but I think there's just enough gray area that the decision could come the other way. And I think if they take into account that we've seen this with Steven Adams or Draymond and LeBron, as you know very well, and including the other things that were happening, there was some awkward plays with Sabonis in game one, and then they were both on the floor like Greco-Roman style. And then if you remember, and I know Spears does too, in game two, there was a foul called on Draymond for another really awkward interaction with Sabonis that was actually challenged and overturned. But there's just been some unnatural, weird stuff happening there. I think ultimately you're right. But if the decision goes the other way, Brian, it's going to be because this is Draymond Green. And there is a track record here, and they don't give him the benefit of the doubt because of that track record.
Yeah, when I immediately saw the play, the first thing I said is he grabbed his ankle. I think if for those you guys have seen Sabonis up close, he's a mammoth of a man. He's a really huge guy. And so I do wonder where could have Draymond had land. Like this is a millisecond decisions. I think his frustration of getting, and what the Warriors will lean on is there's an actual photo where you see Sabonis's arms both around Draymond's ankle. So the frustration of that led to him being excessive in how he stepped. I kind of think that sometimes you got to remember if you slap somebody, you know, you might get punched back, right? And some may say it's some gamesmanship, but, you know, Sabonis got x-rays and Draymond got x-rays afterwards.
Yeah. I mean, look, it's not my chest. I'm sure his chest was sore, but
it's just
put it this way. I was not surprised when the x-rays came back negative.
This has been an amazing series. Like if I'm Sacramento, like, no, we want Draymond to play.
Right.
We don't want no excuses, man. You know what I mean? Like that's the one thing about that, Cavs Warriors series is I always think about him being gone for two games. It's kind of something that's never really talked about.
Well, one game,
but still that, you know, certainly had a major impact on the series.
I don't know if I'm belaboring this point 7 years later, but Draymond was not suspended for hitting LeBron in the groin.
Yeah.
he was suspended for accumulation of flagrant foul points.
Okay.
And I know that, I mean, I know if you're a Warriors fan, maybe you don't care about that nuance.
Yeah.
But they didn't look at it and say, oh, that
he's. But you know what, Brian, you're right, because that gets lost in the sauce a lot.
He does get lost in the sauce.
In fact, I forgot that.
Right. So if you get four flagrant, if you get a flagrant two, it counts for 2 points. If you get a flagrant one, it's 1 point. If you get four flagrant foul points, you are suspended. He body slammed somebody, I can't remember who, and got a flagrant one. And when he kicked Steven Adams in the groin, the league upgraded it to a flagrant two. He didn't get a flagrant two in the moment. And he got lucky with that, because if he got a flagrant two, he would have been ejected right there.
Yeah.
So when he got that second, that flagrant foul upgraded, because there was no foul in the moment. They didn't call a foul on that play.
Yeah.
What people remember about that play is he got up and got into LeBron's chest, which, by the way, he then called LeBron the B word in that. I wrote it when I wrote my book about the Cavs 2016 title. I wrote extensively about that interaction and did a lot of lip reading of what they said to each other. Draymond, said, "You a B," and LeBron said, "I'm a father and I'm a man and a father," amongst other things, right back to his face. That's one of the things that Joakim Noah used to say to LeBron, and LeBron would always say back to him, "I'm a man and a father." But anyway, so for people who have screamed that's an
amazing mind check, like a mind twist, right? Like, how do you respond to that?
Well, that's the thing. Like, I wrote this. I wrote a piece this week.
Your mama. About, like, what do you say? Like,
what? Yeah, right.
Can I tell you this real quick? When I was playing JUCO ball, there was a guy named Michael Seawright. When I was playing at Foothill College, we were playing Hartnell College, and one of my the dude was like 28 years old, played JUCO ball. And one of my teammates, Matisse Moore, was just razzing this. "Man, you old dude over here playing, man. You got to pick up your kids after school. Like, why are you here, man? You could be my uncle." And the guy says, "Hey, man, I just got out of the service. I served our country. And I'm just trying to do something with my life. So why are you saying all these things to me?" And we're like, "Hey, what do you say to that?" Like,
ouch! Like that's like great trash talk.
I salute you, man. I'm sorry.
thank you for your service.
Yeah, we're like, "Oh, we can't talk trash to him anymore, man. He like killed all the fun of it, you know." So LeBron's retort is actually like, "What do you say to that?"
Yeah. Well, I wrote a piece this week about the great instigators LeBron's dealt with in his career: Deshaun Stevenson and Lance Stevenson and Jason Terry and even Draymond. But apparently if you can trigger LeBron, if you're prepared for the consequences, you can trigger LeBron by using those words. I would not advise it, but anyway, that's the thing. I think, Draymond was not suspended for that, And so
respect to the Cavs for coming back and winning that. That was incredible.
Well, I don't want to relitigate 2016, but I would argue that Andrew Bogut getting hurt,
that was huge
in game five, was more impactful than Draymond's suspension, because they had to play games six and seven without their key starting defensive center.
The injured Festus Ezeli, who probably shouldn't have been on the court.
Correct. So,
who hasn't played since?
Yeah. Kirk, you do think there's a possibility I don't have a good feel. The league makes decisions now. And I am like, well, I did not feel that. So, but my feel is that is not going to happen.
Well, I would trust that you're more experienced. I just think there's a chance. That's what I'm trying to say. It's a murky science at best. I'm not pretending I know what's going to happen in these kinds of decisions.
Do you guys think both of them, if they're at least minimum, both should be fined, or Draymond should be fined, or nothing?
Well,
just move on like game, nothing.
Draymond, I could see being fined because it was, it was even more excessive than a typical flagrant foul. I think after the game.
Are you talking about the crowd surfing?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Man, I'll tell you what, you could probably write a novella about the area around the Warriors bench these last two games, because E40's thing went down right by their bench. After the game, Draymond, you know, that's where the politicking started. Draymond said, you know, this has happened two games in a row and the officials just watched it. He's talking about having his leg grabbed. That's not true. They gave Sabonis a technical foul. Yeah. They saw it. They said, that's not right. Technical foul. And then Sabonis, he pretty much wouldn't say anything in the walk-off interview with Jared Greenberg from TNT. Greenberg asked him, and he's like, what about this Draymond play? And he's like, boy, the fans were great tonight. He just pretty much ignored it. And then
in the post-game interview, when asked specifically about grabbing the ankle, he kind of went back to himself, right? So
he said, I felt I had to protect myself. So like he conferred with an NBA defense attorney, and they came up, you know, like that, Kirk, that happens. Like before post-game press conferences, there's like, sometimes committee meetings where they decide like we're going to go this way, we're going to go that way. And I'm, you know, I don't know for sure. I want to be clear. I'm not reporting, but I suspect that there was a negotiation about what was going to be said on the mic.
Hey, Sacramento, just go get it. Go get it. You don't need to pine to get this dude suspended. Just go beat him. Show that you're better and beat him and move forward, man. Don't have no asterisk. Just go beat him.
That's a veteran. That's a veteran speaking those words. Future Hall of Famer too. So listen to that. Hall of Famer in a matter of days, matter of months. So, all right, let's take a look at the vital game coming up on Wednesday, is game two, Lakers Grizzlies. It sounds like they as of this moment, they haven't issued a full injury report on Ja. They will later today. By the time this pod comes out, he will have been ruled, you know, doubtful, questionable, out. I don't know what. Even if he does play, we don't know, but he's going to be impacted. So, Spears, the Grizzlies are coming into this game. They are not going to have Brandon Clark. They are not going to have Steven Adams. And they are going to have, at the best, a significantly wounded Ja Morant. What is your outlook now, seeing what you've seen so far?
I mean, the Lakers are like this brand new shiny train, man. I'm like, where did they come from? I was at the end of the game, like, whoa, fast breaks, dunks, a new star. Like they were like this movie. Like, you know, you watch this movie where all of a sudden at the end, after all the adversity, they show up and they get the glow. I was like, what am I watching here? They look phenomenal. They look fun. They were like, LeBron's like, hey, young guys, just go have fun. I
it was like that. It was like,
yeah, I'm like,
it was like dad sending the kids out there.
Yeah. And they look like a new scary bunch. Obviously, with Anthony Davis, I'm always just worried about him getting hurt. But if he stays healthy, like they appear capable of challenging anybody. I'm just very stunned in this whole crazy roller coaster of a season that they've had. This is not indicative of most of the garbage that we saw most of the season, right? They look like fun. And right now, I think with Memphis, maybe all the drama off the court is starting to weigh heavy on this season for them. The injuries are weighing heavy. Jaren Jackson is, he's phenomenal. And I'm glad that we're starting to see how great he is. And congratulations on the Defensive Player of the Year award. But if Ja can't be Ja, then the Lakers are going to go forward. Like they have, Memphis can't have a chance unless Ja is spectacular, because this Lakers team is, I mean, they look, I'm just really amazed by what I'm seeing from them so far.
Kirk, if I were speaking to the Lakers, I would say to them, step on the throat if you can, because, you know, in theory, the more days that pass, and then there's two days after game two before game three.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live. You know, on Saturday in L.A., the Clippers are playing the Suns in Game 4. Game 4 of that series will be finished before the Lakers play Game 3. Wow. Game 4 of Suns Clippers will end before Game 3 of Lakers Grizzlies tips off, okay? That has been not real welcomed. Now, I point out, well, would you rather have that or would you rather fly 4.5 hours between Memphis and L.A.? And I guess it depends on when you ask. Are you asking when you're over Kansas or are you asking when you're getting up for a shoot around, you know? So,
meanwhile, Steph Curry takes the car back home after the game last night.
Exactly. So, all right. So my point,
can I say this about the Clippers, spoiled this right now? I was at their preseason game in Seattle and these dudes had crab legs waiting for them after the game.
Spears.
Crab legs.
So
like little ones. I'm talking about the ones that are spiny. You know, the ones that you could, if you don't cut them right, you could hurt yourself. Them king crab legs.
Yes. Do you know what crab costs these days? Let me just say this.
And they had the bibs. Come on, man. They had the bibs on after the game eating crab legs in the preseason.
Let me just say.
I'm like, what do they get in the season? Dinosaur leg?
I'm about to tell you because the Clippers were very kind to offer. And no, I don't want to say it was a bribe or anything, but they were very kind to offer the media
food. Right,
their buffet was ample after the game the other night. And look, you know, we're working late, and
it was Sunday night. Goddamn crab legs.
Well, I'll just be honest here. I'm about transparency. I accepted. a trip so down the Clippers,
trash, right?
Yes. You know, there were Suns employees that were happy to accept part of me. And let me just say that food was spectacular.
Of course.
it was steak and wonderful accoutrement.
Well, no, what kind of steak? Was it Wagyu?
I don't know, Spears. I ate it cold. You know, I had to warm it up in the microwave like 2 hours
nice
later.
Nice though, huh? Like garlic potatoes too.
They had very high end mac and cheese, very very high end, and fish and other things. I'm just gonna say the Clippers.
They thought Cuban was the guy with the amenities. Nah, man, Bombers.
The Clippers.
With it,
the Clippers do well. Okay, I'm just gonna say the Clippers do very very well now. Having said all that, that's the irony about the Lakers and the Clippers is that the Lakers being the premier franchise, they're relatively like the family, the mom and pop shop, and the Clippers are like IBM or actually more appropriately Microsoft.
There you go.
So anyway, my point as we got way off the topic is if, you know, John Morant's going to get some time here. So even whether he plays or even if he's limited, there gets some more time. So Ja's going to get, you know, probably stronger. So I would say if I were the Lakers, and specifically because AD has sometimes a tendency maybe to not always go gas to the floor. I would be putting my foot on their backside and say, pretend like you're down 1-0 and going on the road, not up 1-0 going back home. Because the Grizzlies, I have to assume, will play with full. And like the Grizzlies have won a ton of games without Ja. Like this is not something that can be ignored. And they are good on their home floor. They had the best record on their home floor this year. So Kirk, I believe that there's a good chance that the Grizzlies can even this, even without Ja. And the Lakers should approach this as an opportunity, not just, okay, we've gotten this done.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the Lakers aren't a typical seven seed. Spears alluded to it. I think they're 20-9 since the trade deadline. They have LeBron James, yada, yada, yada. But every year, guys, we see one series, if not a whole conference fate, disrupted by injuries. And what I want to remind everybody of, this is not Memphis. Memphis is coming in to this series without Steven Adams, without Brandon Clark. Now, maybe without Ja Morant. The question I'd ask the audience is, how many playoff teams could you take two or three key pieces of their rotation away and expect them to survive any playoff series in this league? That said, game two for Memphis is a huge game for them. If Ja Morant can't play, the Lakers are going to be big favorites and should win that game. If Memphis can win without Ja, that changes the whole vibe in this series going back to LA. If he is able to play and they win, again, we're not talking about the Lakers running away with the series anymore. That's going to die because the Grizzlies could certainly win in LA as well. But the Lakers, Austin Reeves, we have to talk about Austin Reeves because he gives
incredible
this team a different personality and a different strength in the backcourt than anybody else of us expected them to have just a few weeks ago. This dude was a star in game one. And in the absence of Ja Morant, really just drove it. And Spears, you alluded to this. Not a lot of games end on a 15-0 run. That was an exclamation point that the Lakers put on that team at the end of game one. So, yes, must-win game in game two. But let's not forget, this is a nightmare matchup for the two seed who's already dinged up against the LeBron AD who pressure the rim. And one last thing. Jaren Jackson played great in game one, the defensive player of the year, but he's going to get in foul trouble at some point in this series. Yeah. And then that thin backcourt without Clark and without Steven Adams is going to be exposed a little bit more than it was.
Can I say something real quick, Brian?
Of course.
Talked to Dave McMiniman about this. I asked him if those number 15 jerseys were in crypto in the Lakers gift shop. And he said they weren't. Lakers. Tell them number 15 jerseys, boy, they should be coming. They should have them hot and ready.
Ready for game
like,
break.
How is this kid Reeves jersey not being sold? Like,
I will
on,
say, man. You know, he's a free agent at the end of the season. He falls under what is known as the Gilbert Arenas rule about he's limited in what he can be offered, and the Lakers retain his rights to re-sign him. Bobby Marks wrote a big piece about it. Not a big piece, but he in the My Hoop Collective column that ran a couple of weeks ago, he detailed what the Lakers can do. And so they're in the driver's seat to keep him if they want to pay him. If they want Kyrie, that's a different story, but I would just, keep that under advisement right now.
Sign I am him. Sign him.
Yeah, I want to say something real quick about that. So I want to applaud the NBA. Of course, our operations people, our TV people, but I want to applaud the NBA because they cleared two bits of sound very quickly that were awesome in this last week. One, typically there's this whole process that you have to go through to get sound because there's an NBA observer who has to, I hope I'm not getting in trouble by peeling this curtain back. There's an NBA observer who sits in, I don't know if it's in the truck or wherever, but they have to approve what goes out over the air. You are not always seeing the raw stuff, and there's a process that has to go down. So one, I want to applaud the fact that we got that turned around and everything during a timeout. Austin Reeves was mic'd up. He says, I'm him, pounds his chest. Coming out of the break, it was already ready and going. Great job by everybody involved. Our people for turning it around, the NBA people for approving it. It was awesome. Second, on Monday night, Doc Rivers, minute or and a half, 2 minutes into the second half of his game, the 76ers game against the Nets. Nets had been really controlling the game up to that point. He didn't like, he drew a play up in the locker room or in the huddle. They, you know, they blew off the play. He called timeout and he throttled them. They had the audio. TNT presented it to the NBA. I have to assume the NBA cleared it. And we got to see, with a great camera angle and great audio, Doc Rivers excoriating his team. And they came out and played completely differently at that, went on a big run for the rest of the quarter, changed the game, took control. And be able to go inside like that is terrific. So I applaud all parties like that. You know, recently we heard Monty Williams with that thing where he told Kevin Durant, gave him like a little pep talk during the game. Like, you know, I was watching the Masters
last season, right?
Yeah. I was watching the Masters. Right. I was watching the Masters last 2 weeks ago, and they have those players. Rory McIlroy is playing a hole in the Masters, giving an interview, walking down the fairway, mid-round, first round of the Masters, talking about how he's playing and the shot that he's coming up with it with an AirPod in, giving an interview. That's the state of the art. And thank you, Austin Reeves, for wearing the mic and for all that. But anyway, I thought that those were great, and take the fans inside a playoff game and to have that. And by the way, like the coaches have a switch. They can turn their mic on and off. If Doc didn't want that on, he can turn it off. He didn't, he left it on. So I applaud.
Hey, Brian, was any of the Draymond sound approved from game two in Sacramento? Spears.
I think that's still under review.
Or the E40 sound. We didn't get the E40.
Yeah, the E40 sound. Yeah, I'd like to hear some other ones from Sacramento that Spears probably heard.
He got a draw where he says, tell me where to go. He told him where to go all right before he left.
Man, yeah, still under, like the Draymond stomp, it's still under review about that sound.
Although
there was a pretty sure I knew a couple of words that Draymond said. I could read his lips.
If I'm him, that picture of the Kings crowd and him yelling at him, like, I'm getting that picture framed or somebody painting it for me. That was like, wow. I was like, wow, look at this. This is crazy.
I mean, it's a great moment. And this is what the Kings fans wanted, right? This is what they've been missing out on. Like, this is it.
And they're still mad at him for what he said on the podcast about them being, you know, before the season, about, like, being trash, I guess, right? This is – it's – playoff basketball is the best, isn't it?
It's – and this is just the – this is not even an appetizer. This is the amuse-bouche. Did I say that right? Amuse-bouche?
Sounds right.
You're gonna have to ask the Clippers.
They had the crab aprons on after the game, man. He's, you know, Kawhi and Paul George, like, you know, putting it on.
Yeah,
incredible, man. NBA has changed.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, you said the Lakers got like ham and cheese sandwiches, right?
The Lakers are doing just fine.
That the Buss family made for them.
The Lakers live a just fine life. Don't get me wrong. I'm just saying that it's interesting that, you know, the Lakers are like one of the most hugest brands in the world, but they are from a backing standpoint, they are dwarfed by their, you know, inferior hallway mates. And
Steve Ballmer, you owe me some crab legs, man. You hooking up Windhorse for meals, man. Y'all owe me some crab legs, bro.
I can see Spears in the media room putting the computer to the side. He's like, wait a minute, I got to take care of this post-game meal first with the biff.
Yeah, I like crab legs.
By the way, this will be out of date because I don't know what's going to happen tonight, but Ballmer was in full Ballmer in game one. On Sunday, sure. He was sitting right next to the Clipper bench, and Ty Lue. I keep screwing myself here because I'm getting ahead. You could all be so spoiled, like bad milk. Ty Lue's game plan completely flummoxed the Suns in game one. And Ty was in his bag, and he just had this real confident look on his face. He was very happy with it. And Ballmer was down there celebrating. You know, Ty Lue barely raises his chin, you know, and Ballmer is down there doing just short of backflips.
I thought when Russell Westbrook made the play of the game, that incredible defensive stop on Booker and then saved the ball off of Booker in one swooping action, which just epitomized that whole game to me, Brian. Westbrook coming out of nowhere to really talk about disrupt that whole team and that vibe. But yeah, I thought Ballmer might shake himself to death celebrating that play.
His poor wife sitting next to him, man. She's what a trooper. You know,
yeah.
Watch, he's gonna have a. They win this series. He's gonna have a psalm at the game. He's gonna have like a dude making craft drinks. You know, one of those bartenders from Kirk's neighborhood in Austin. You know, one of them craft drink guys. Psalm from the Napa Valley. Yeah, like Clipper's life is good, baby.
All right. Well, thanks, guys. The playoffs are getting going, and we're really enjoying it. Thank you to Jackson and Bruce, our producers. And guys, I look forward to talking to you soon when we have more good stuff to talk about. Thanks for getting up, Spears. And thanks for listening to Hoop Collective. And we'll talk to you in a few days.